Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right. Here for another installment of It's My House. And today's topic is we can do trending topics, anything you guys want to talk about. But on my to-do list for today, and that's what I named today's live stream, organizing a wish list. So touched on this the last 2 weeks, but I really need to nail it down. We've got four primary wish lists that we have to organize this week. And tools, building materials, and here are four primary lists. Tools, building materials, volunteers and partners, food. And food, we also include the solar garden and solar farm that we want to organize. Now, so that's all included in category number four, food, of which we've received, thanks to Connie Beasley, we've received four packets of food to start that off. And we might, our wish list might grow to, mm, we probably want no more than 12 things that we might have to grow. We've got four. We've got some commitments from some other pledges, rather, from a few more people. So I don't want to have too much too soon. All right. So, but anyway, the seeds, and we'll ask for more. You know what? We might ask for, let's see. No more. We might ask for about four to eight more packets of seeds. So we'll have total no more than 12 packets of seeds. That's top end. Because, I mean, that's going to be a lot of food. So in any event, and we want to start off small but successful. Okay, in any event, so day by day, we're going to post, by Friday we'll have, because today we're just doing announcements on this, our four wish list are the categories of tools, building materials, volunteers, partners, and food. Okay, now, we go for our morning motivation. And, okay. What are we looking for? Faith Street. Okay, still operating on this phone. Okay, let's see what happens. All right, here we go. Let's see if this works. No. Let's try it again. There we go. All right, so we're going to play a little Steve Harvey motivation as we usually do to start the day. If you guys want to hit on any trending topics of this month, you got the Ahmaud Arbery case. They did sentencing on that. Oh, man, what? Okay. All right. Let's try this again. All right, F-A-I, okay, here we go. So if you got any, what are your plans for 2022? Any interesting trending topics of late that you're interested in discussing? Okay, this isn't doing what I wanted to do. All right, let's try it again. You see if that works. Okay. All right, EF. Well, let's try it a new way. All right. Got any news? Please share it with us. Oh, man. Okay. All right, well, you know what? We can't – let me go with a good favorite of ours out of the archives.
My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salee is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use to build a road or a courthouse.
But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is, this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salida, refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salitas out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salitas are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What did you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this. And paid it off. And we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired. And now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salitas home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project.
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking, and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salitas neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to, and it's difficult and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous, and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums with great views over the Rocky River. Those condos will be a cinch to sell.
But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Salitas and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this scenic park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area. And how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
The term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal statutory term.
Meaning?
That is used to describe an area. And the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use, whether
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air.
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all seven council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have two bathrooms?
No.
Blight. Two-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or, I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute, maybe, but without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nationwide epidemic. We have documented more than 10,000 instances of government taking property from one person to give it to another in just the last 5 years.
Dana Berliner and Scott Bullock are attorneys at a libertarian nonprofit group called the Institute for Justice, which has filed suit on behalf of the Salites against the city of Lakewood. They claim that taking private property this way is unconstitutional.
It is fundamentally wrong and contrary to the Constitution for the government to take property from one private owner and hand it over to another private owner just because the government thinks that person is going to make more productive use of the land.
Everyone knows that property can be taken for a road, but nobody thinks that property can be taken to give it to their neighbor or the large business down the street for their economic benefit. People are shocked when they hear that this is going on around the country.
And it's not just people's homes that are the targets in these eminent domain cases. The Institute for Justice has also filed suit against the city of Mesa, Arizona, to save Randy Bailey's brake repair shop, the shop he got from his father and hopes someday to pass on to his son. The city of Mesa, citing the need for redevelopment, is trying to force Bailey to relocate to make way for an Ace Hardware store that would look better and pay more taxes.
Redevelopment to me is, work with the existing people there and redevelop.
Right.
Not, you get out, we're bringing this guy in.
Bailey's Brake Service has been on this corner for more than 30 years.
In Mesa, this is the corner, Main Street and Country Club. There's not a better corner in this city.
And business has been pretty good down the years?
Business has been awesome.
Now, what used to be in all of this property? I mean, everything else has disappeared.
The city come in and got immediate possession and started demolishing it, making it dirt.
The city has made dirt out of 3 restaurants and 4 businesses that once stood on this 5-acre lot.
And it's not just business properties that they're doing this on. You know, they wiped out 8 people's homes over here. You know, your home ain't even safe.
Bailey told us his neighbors let the city buy them out. But he's refusing to sell.
I'm standing in their way. I'm their thorn in their side.
A thorn in the side of Ken Linhart, who owns the Ace Hardware store a few blocks away. Linhart wants a much bigger store. He could have negotiated with Bailey, but instead, he convinced the city of Mesa to try to buy Bailey's land through eminent domain and then sell it to him.
The city of Mesa wants to move Mr. Bailey about a block away. And from what I understand, it's going to be a new building, new equipment, moving expenses, and everything set up for him. I don't see how Mr. Bailey's going to get hurt.
you can't replace a business in the same location. This place was built in 1952 as a break-in front-end shop. I don't care where you move into City Mesa, it would never be the same.
So Bailey went to Lenhart looking for a way to stay on his corner.
I tried to go to him and see if we couldn't work something out on this, and he told me, no, there ain't room for you there. We're going to let the city just take care of you.
Did you ever sit down and try to negotiate with him?
No, I never did.
Redevelopment seems to me to make obvious good sense. But the right of eminent domain to take one man's private property, Randy Bailey, to give it, in effect, to Ken Lenhart for his private property.
It happens all over the country. Practically any town you want to go to, they're redeveloping their town centers.
Right.
Now, are we going to sit in Mesa, Arizona, and have our town center decay? As a citizen of Mesa, I don't want that to happen.
If I'd had a for sale sign out there, it'd been a whole different deal. And for them to come in and tell me how much my property is worth, and for me to get out because they're bringing in somebody else, when I own the land, is unfounded to me. It don't even sound like the United States.
And this isn't happening just in small towns. Right here in New York City, a few blocks away from Times Square, New York State has forced a man to sell land on that corner over there that his family had owned for more than 100 years. And what's going up instead? A courthouse? A school? Nope. The new headquarters of the New York Times.
It seems the world's most prestigious newspaper wants to build a new home on this block. But Stratford Wallace and the block's other property owners did not want to sell. Wallace told us the newspaper never tried to negotiate with him. Instead, the Times teamed up with a major real estate developer, and together they convinced the state to use eminent domain to force Wallace out by declaring the block blighted.
I challenge them. This is not blighted property, nor is this property over here blighted.
But New York State Supreme Court disagreed. The court ruled that the newspaper's new headquarters would eliminate blight, and that even though a private entity, the New York Times, is the main beneficiary, improving the block would benefit the public. New York Times executives would not talk to us about it on camera. Okay, back in Lakewood, Ohio, Jim and Joanne Salid are still waiting for their court decision. Most of their neighbors have agreed to sell if the project goes ahead, but the Salids plus a dozen others are hanging tough.
I thought I bought this place, but I guess I just leased it until the city wants it. That's what makes me very angry. This is my dream home, and I'm going to fight for it.
Now the fight is moving to the ballot box. Lakewood residents opposed to the development have gathered enough signatures to force a citywide referendum on it come November.
All right. Well, question of the day, and if you guys want to bring up any trending topics, you can. Is eminent domain abused? What are your thoughts? 619-768-2945. Let me repeat it again. 619-768-2945. If you got any comment on that. Answer that question. Is eminent domain abused these days? And then, or if you have any trending topics you want to discuss, our topic for the day is organizing a wish list. And our wish list, we got four of them. And we're going to post starting tomorrow, one a day. Tools, we're posting this week. And this is in no particular order how we'll post this. A tools wish list, building materials wish list, volunteers slash partners wish list, and food wish list. So far now, because we want to do a solar garden this year and a solar farm. So far, we've got one person that has sent in, Connie Beasley, shout out to him, a packet of four seeds, watermelon, honeydew melon, okra, and tomatoes. All right, we're probably going to, and we got some pledges from a couple of people just waiting for their seeds to come in. We're probably going to do, when we start to plant, probably in all total no more than 12 and or fruits and or vegetables. Beasley sent us two vegetables and he sent two fruit, a package of seeds, that is. And we don't want to produce too much. So it, you know what, we might just take on four more packets of seeds. And that, 'cause eight, I mean, this is our first venture out into this, so there's a lot to learn with this, you know, coming from my end. So anyway, we'll post that one day, because today's Monday. So tomorrow we'll probably post our first wish list, which will be volunteers and partners. We'll take a head count of how many partners / volunteers we have on hand to start. You know, and I'm counting myself as one of them. So me here, then we got one in Nashville, Tennessee. So you know, we'll count up to what we have tomorrow. So that'll be the first one we post, and then we'll put how many we need, and just calls action until we fill that up. So anyway, one new one a day. So by Friday, with the tools wish list and the building materials wish list, and then you basically get in where you fit in it. You know, if you see yourself fitting in at all. So, that's what we have on that now. I'm doing some multitasking here this morning, as I often do. And well, let's take this little break and we'll be back.
Yeah, that's right. listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it, I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back, and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the $150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you, don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduce myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. And they paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I'd never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting, and I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn-back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York. I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
It's said everyone has a story. China has almost 1.4 billion of them. From the mega cities to the vast countryside, from the ancient modern, it's our job to bring these stories to you, direct from one of the most rapidly changing nations on the planet.
I'm Laura Schmidt, and we're rediscovering China.
Today we're exploring marriage pressure.
我感觉我这个商品感觉现在头上已经标着说打折。
Its causes, its consequences, and how China singletons are fighting back. Go on a shopping trip on a Saturday afternoon in downtown Beijing and you might find something unexpected on offer.
报名吗？这是？可以现场报名。可以现场报名吗？啊，
The young men and women are making their way to a restricted area in the heart of the building. The details of the latest arrivals flash across a big screen, and the DJ is warming up the turntables. Then, there's salsa. Welcome to Speed Dating, Chinese style.
If you ever needed proof that what China does, it does big, just take a look at this speed dating activity. Over 200 singletons are estimated to show up today and take a shot at finding true love and finding it fast. But this really hasn't been what I expected of a speed dating session. There's been a lot of dancing, a lot of loud music, and a lot of bright lights. Not really the perfect environment to chat and meet new people.
But that doesn't seem to have deterred our eager participants. They are part of the latest wave of singledom. There are currently over 200 million single people of marriageable age in China. That's virtually equivalent to the populations of the UK, Germany, and France put together. This has created a marriage economy, a feature of which is huge speed dating activities like this. In Beijing alone, the organizer, a dating website, holds hundreds of these events every year.
纯粹来玩一下，那这里当然为了相亲了。嗯，没有，特别遗憾。平时工作是职业画家和平面设计师，所以我的工作就特别宅，所以就没有机会接触很多的人，所以就是借这个机会过来看看。当然，大家就是参加这种活动的人，大多数都比较内向，所以说这种活动也比较不好搞。
In a society where a third of young women admit they prefer watching TV drama series to socializing, and two-thirds of young men confess they'd rather stay at home surfing the internet, the chances of meeting Mr. or Miss Right are obviously limited. And even when they make the effort, full-on physical contact with a total stranger can feel a bit awkward. What these speed dating events set out to do is make people come out of their shell and see if there's a spark.
大家都在说现在单身女生年纪大也没什么，不结婚也没什么，但其实内心还是会着急。而且就是有时候突然想到我过完年27岁了，就是不是我不想找，是我真的找不到合适的呀。那毕竟大家都不想一个人过啊。
因为这20多年了，连女生手都没牵过，特别着急。然后我爸我妈也每次都催我，他们都说过年的时候找不到女朋友就别回来了。
In China, traditionally the cutoff line for what is considered marriageable age is 25 for men and 23 for women. But times are changing and so-called late marriages are becoming the norm. At the same time, the pressure to seal the deal is growing. Young Chinese are becoming increasingly anxious about being left over.
我们最早的时候6年前应该我刚刚接触这一行业的时候，基本上都是适婚年龄，27、28岁28、29岁就觉得很年轻了。但是现在不一样了，现在我们可能有20、23岁的女孩子，在学校的女孩子还有过来找要找女男朋友，就是年龄越来越低龄化。
Zhang Pengkun is a professional matchmaker with the largest dating website in China. She serves its VIP clients.While professional matchmaking is hardly a new concept in China, through the internet it has experienced a revival as services are moving online. The dating website Ms. Zhang works for claims to have around 200 million users.
我一直跟进了一个男会员，终于有消息了，得给他打一个电话。你好，请问是张先生对吗？你好，我是百合网的顾问张鹏坤。然后其实有一些您具体的这个情况，我还想多跟您聊聊，可以吗？因为我看您是38岁，1.76米的身高，然后是在美国留学回来，目前是一个单身的状态哈。有过婚姻经历吗？
This kind of one-on-one dating advice is not cheap. The fees start at around $1,500 and can run up to over $7,000. Her clients do not want to reveal their identity, as being single is still considered a sensitive topic in China. And so it's only through talking to Ms. Zhang that we can get an insight into their dating wants and needs.
女孩子希望男人有责任心，然后最好是事业上有一点小成就。那男人呢往往都是这样，就是我看中的首先是年轻漂亮，然后相处之后是性格脾气。好，今天要接待的两位会员男士已经到了，就是这么休闲装就过来了是吧？好，来咱们这边来，男生坐这边吧啊，一会儿女孩子有包啊什么的就放在这边舒服一点啊，然后可能会比较热，脱了外套啊。我看看整理一下帅不帅，喝点什么呀，咖啡还是水？
水就行。
行嘞，那等一下啊。好，亲爱的来了。怎么样，路上还堵车吗？
还行，
还可以哈。那个小李啊已经到了
啊。
亲爱的，快过来，两个人认识一下，这是小刘，然后这是李先生，两个人认识一下，握个手吧。已经很长时间就期待这次见面了，那你们俩聊聊啊，然后我先过去。行嘞，好。女孩子更为迫切啊，他们觉得比如说我见了几个人之后还是不可以，那我再去快一点，快一点给我介绍啊。那男人一般可能会没有那么急迫了，他会觉得说那好，没有遇到合适的没关系，我现在35岁，我45岁的时候可以照样的找女朋友。
This rush to get married, especially for China's women, is not a new phenomenon. In fact, it has a long history.
那中国很多人都会说不孝有三哈，无后为大。那么呢，一到了一定特定的年龄，你还没有结婚，还没有要结婚要孩子，那这件事情本身而言，就是父母会觉得面子上过不去，另外呢还有就是孩子也会觉得，那我孝顺父母啊，我应该是首先要满足他们的心愿， 包括也会有这样，就是到您这儿来，我能不能不去考虑结婚啊？但是你是为了就是让我的父母知道我在做这件事情啊，也会有这样的情况。
In the face of this immense pressure to bring home a partner, particularly over Chinese New Year, young Chinese have become incredibly creative in how to appease their parents. One option is to rent a fake boy or girlfriend online. So let's take a look how that works. This website's name translates as rentafriend.com. Their banner says their members offer services including traveling and meeting parents.There's even the possibility of a fake marriage. Users have profiles similar to social media sites and can upload photos, so potential partners can get a good look. Upon registering, I get asked a few rather personal questions, including my height, weight, and body shape. I'm not inclined to be entirely truthful. Signing up is simple enough. Now all I need to do is pick a person to pose as my boyfriend and get in touch.But what do their services actually include? So on one of the biggest forums in the Chinese web, we've discovered this post by a male person who offers their services as a fake boyfriend for Chinese New Year. So as you can see, it's a really detailed post, and services range from going shopping with you for around $3 US per hour to watching a movie at just over $1 US per hour.He'll also go and see your parents, a little bit more expensive, at just over $7 US per hour. And then there is the possibility of getting physical. So you can have a regular kiss for just under $1 US, fairly inexpensive, or French kissing for just over $1 US. And then, from what we can tell, there are also more intimate services on offer. So whether this is a fake boyfriend or something else is entirely up to you.While we can't verify how serious that post was, this one seemingly is. We decide to get in touch with the young man advertising himself. He replies within minutes. As I pretend to be a Chinese girl facing marriage pressure, it occurs to me that you never really know who is on the other side of that screen. Is this really a good solution?
I wouldn't say it's probably a changing society. So for the old generation, they have very formulaic type of life, what is good and what is bad, but not the case for the new generation. So therefore, there's quite a lot of conflicts.
OK, 好，我们继续啦。
In 2013, Professor Wang published a book on the economics of love and marriage. He is skeptical of the rent-a-boyfriend business.
I'm not entirely sure I really like that. But if you think that the old generation cannot change and there's no way to communicate, well, why not, right? I mean, it makes life a lot easier for everyone.And makes people a lot happier for everyone. So, but however, I think that if I would like to say is maybe it is a good thing to try to get your parents to understand the problem rather than pretending the problem does not exist.
Renting a fake partner is a relatively new concept. A majority of young Chinese still choose to deal with their parents' nagging head on.Fei Wei is one of them. She is from Zhejiang province and works in Shanghai. She has a good degree and a good job. In her free time, she teaches floristry.
哎，这个绣球就是国产的绣球，就只有这个颜色的，对不对？有没有稍微可以放得久一点的？
But none of her achievements seemed to matter the day she turned 25.
我过了25岁之后，我妈只要跟我打电话，说任何事情，她最后可能绕绕绕绕，都会绕到这个 啊，为什么还没有找男朋友啊，嗯，最近有什么最新情况啊，然后跟大家在一起聊天，聊到我的时候，聊着聊着就回到了这个话题，那个时候我就觉得好像嗯有一点压力了。
你妈最近怎样啊？
最近我妈没啥实际行动，但是她会在言语有言语暴力。25岁已经走下坡路了，这是我妈的经典名言。我现在已经是一个就是需要打折才能出售的货。
那她怎么把你出售啊？
现在看起来这个货也不太好卖，所以我妈最近比较消停。
Shay Wei's hometown is just 40 minutes from Shanghai by high-speed train. However, the visits home are no longer a pleasure.
我现在把回家认为就是一个攻坚战，就我现在每次回去，我朋友说你去干嘛了，我都说嗯，我跟父母斗智斗勇去了，因为回家的话就可能就变成了全面战争了，就不止我要应付我爸妈，可能还有我爷爷奶奶、外公外婆，那还有我很多亲戚。
Fei Wei's mother is a small-town primary school teacher. Her colleagues and friends frequently ask about her daughter and whether she's still single. So she's merely passing on to her daughter the pressure she faces herself.
Fei Fei is still very young. Why are you so worried about her getting married as soon as possible?
基本上像她那个年龄，在我们这里基本上结婚了，就剩下她一个人还没找对象。特别是他的外公啊、外婆、爷爷奶奶，这年纪大的更要提了。他们说年纪大了，啊，总是盼着这一天，看到他结婚这样子。催嘛是催他的，跟他说的，能够碰到合适的嘛，就是自己主动一点也没关系啊。但是最终还是要他决定的。
This is Daniel Yen and his girlfriend Wei Tang.Daniel returned to China after completing his studies in the UK and now manages a book cafe in Nanjing. He's 26. He and his girlfriend have been dating half, and now they've decided it's time to tie the knot.
A lot of people say, I think, yeah, Western, I think too. I mean, one man can wait. The girls on the other side is just...not like that. So my stress mostly comes from my girlfriends.
Well, for China's women, it's the prospect of aging and an idea that this makes them less valuable that creates marriage pressure. For China's men, it's mostly a financial headache.
我这边是比较惨。我大学毕业的时候，我想我说那个叫什么呢？那个反正我当时是觉得我肯定是第一个结婚的，结果我到现在我周围的人都结婚了，就差我一个没结婚。我有一个89年的朋友，现在孩子都3岁。
My girlfriend and her family are quite traditional, you know, like a traditional Chinese family. They wish that the wedding could be like huge or you know just like face stuff, right? Like they just don't want to lose face. So they kind of wishing the wedding should be like amazing.
For Daniel, at the moment, marriage pressure translates into financial pressure. Even though the couple have tried to minimize the cost, they are still looking at a cost of over $20,000 for their wedding. In Chinese culture, it is the norm for the groom's family to pay for the wedding. But Daniel earns less than $1,000 per month, and his father, he won't pitch in. But Daniel's future in-laws still think it's his responsibility as groom to pay.
其实，所以我觉得，其实在这边，其实结婚其实有时候挺没意思的。你把什么事情都特别是物质方面的事情太掺杂在里面的话，我觉得结婚一点意思都没有。所以搞得我现在好像都没有什么太想结婚的一些想法了，就觉得
没有什么激情，
没有什么激情，累得不得了。
Nowhere is the pressure on young people to marry more visible than at the marriage market in Shanghai's People's Park. Here we see the extreme lengths parents are willing to go to in order to escape the embarrassment of an unmarried child.
We're here at People's Square, where once again hundreds of people have come to the market.
But it's not just any kind of market. There are no properties or items on offer here, but rather actual people. Sons and daughters who are single and whose parents are desperately trying to match them up with the highest bidder. The tension in the air is tangible. Height, age, income, education, household registration. A life's achievement summed up on a sheet of A4 paper pinned to an umbrella. Except the people on offer may not even know they're being advertised like this, and by their parents too, who hide from the cameras for fear of being exposed.
You look at the Renmin Gongyuan in Shanghai, the successful rate is remarkably low, and because I think that China has changed way too much. So it is very difficult for them to understand what their children actually like. So I think that the successful rate is going to be very, very low.
What is the effect of this marriage pressure on the economy, in your opinion?
Well, I think the more the pressure actually coming from too many single men rather than single women, especially you can see that housing prices being one of the chief results of such kind of pressure for men to be able to find a good wife. One of my colleagues have done research in this and find out that this actually has been rather significant effect in pushing up housing prices.
Some people offer a slightly different take on who is affected more by marriage pressure, men or women. One of them is Joy Chen. She wrote a book advising young women in China not to marry before reaching 30. In this, she was encouraging them to fly in the face of the stigma of being a leftover woman, a term coined by the Chinese media almost a decade ago.
From a demographic standpoint, the leftover woman label is completely inaccurate. There are many more leftover men in society than there are leftover women. Yet this stigma persists. It starts to make women desperate. I mean, I've had women who tell me they're 20 and they're leftover, right? So women start to get very desperate as they near age 30 and say, if I don't marry the next guy who comes along, if I don't grab him and trap him, then it may be too late.
But that, argues Ms. Chen, is a potentially disaster. In her book, she encourages young women to first focus on becoming the person they want to be, to build a career, and most importantly, to wait for the right guy to come along. A marriage sealed in haste, she warns, won't end well.
I've seen studies that say that in Beijing and Shanghai, for people under age 30 who get married, the divorce rate is 60%. So I think it also comes back to a fundamental question about security. You know, I think that question really goes to the heart of this question of marriage and a basic assumption that marriage will bring you en chuan gan. In fact, for the majority of young women in some of these big cities, marriage will lead to the exact opposite, which is divorce.
An upsurge in divorces resulted from the so-called first wave of singledom in China's cities. In the 1950s, the country's first marriage law finally enabled women to file for divorce. The 1970s saw a second wave after educated young men and women sent to the countryside from the city under a government policy were allowed to return home. In many cases, they left behind a spouse in the provinces. Then, in the 90s, China's opening up and reform led to a third wave as people questioned traditional family values. This latest wave was kicked off by rapid economic development and the increased independence of Chinese women.
从男交男朋友这个角度来说，我觉得它是一种浪费时间，因为我觉得风险不可控，它而且它所要承担的风险非常的高，它没有起到一个对事业的一个加速剂的作用，反而是一个包袱。你是怎么看待我现在的这样一个想法和状态
？OK， 乃至成本回报，你觉得交男朋友有什么成本呢？
我觉得成本回报是零的，如果它不能让我的生活锦上添花的话，我觉得人生不需要这一环的。
对啊，如果你觉得没有那就没有了，但是交男朋友有什么成本呢？没有什么成本吧？
有成本啊，时间成本啊，投入啊，包括情感沟通呀，对啊。
那比方说有人陪你去玩呢，如果有一个你很喜欢一起去度假的人跟你去度假，你开不开心呢？
很开心啊。
然后你刚好在这个很开心的事情的时候也认识了不同的朋友，对吧？这个是坏事吗？
不是坏事啊。
那这个有
来说是 OK 的。
这个有没有成本呢？
没有成本。
也没有成本啊，对吧？所以我不见得有成本啊、哦。
长期的维护是要成本。
那你不想回护的话就不回护咯。如果你刚好认识了很新鲜的东西，然后这很新鲜的东西变成了你很回味的东西，那就变成你很想继续再吃的东西，也不见得是个坏事嘛。也没有什么成本嘛，对吧？这问题是你要遇不遇得上咯。
What do you think is better for the economy, staying single, being married?
Well, then it depends on what you mean by the economy, right? Economics is about maximizing what we call the happiness or utility of human beings. And as a liberal economist, my belief is that do whatever that pleases you most, probably maximizes the happiness of the society more.
In 2001, The Economist magazine highlighted the importance of single women to an economy. As more of China's women are choosing to stay single and becoming increasingly independent, they consume more, spend more, and thereby contribute more to the economy.
If there are a lot more single women, we probably should have more services catering for these single women, because single women actually are some of the highest spenders in the society. They are willing to travel, they are very willing to explore different things, they are more likely to dine out, and they are more likely to try what we call experience tourism, meaning tours that provide you with experiences rather than just go here, take a photo, and then come back.
But for the increasing numbers of young Chinese who stay single by choice, there is still a major problem to face. How do they deal with their parents? And one group of people is trying to get parents to rethink their stance. They're the Anti-Marriage Pressure Union. They first caught the public eye with an advert posted in the Beijing Underground during the Chinese New Year of 2016. The ad quickly gained a huge following. Its creator is 31-year-old Chen Yingying.
在就是去年年底的时候，就在某一次线下聚会的时候，这个春节又要来了，然后又要回家了。这个就是我们那些未婚的小伙伴，然后就开始在说，那个亲戚又要催了，然后父母又要逼了。就这个时候，忽然间有个小伙伴，他忽然间就是灵机一闪，那有没有这个可能性，就是我们来出钱来去做一个能够反映年轻人心声的反逼婚的广告呢？
The advert addressed the parents directly, telling them not to worry. Singles can lead a happy life too.It cost over $5,400. The funds were raised by the group themselves, as well as through an online crowdfunding campaign.
其实我们吧，当时做这个广告，我们也知道，就是我们财力有限，就是能做的就那么点。但是呢，我们想，我们不应该就是起止于一个广告。像父母，他可能。那个春节回家他入逼婚了，然后子女他这个时候就可以说啊，您知道吗，就是最近在东直门有一个广告怎么样怎么样怎么样的，他们就可以就这个话题然后来交流双方的想法了，就是一个交流的过程。
The ad is a small attempt to narrow the generational gap that has been the main source of marriage pressure.We've witnessed how hard some young people are trying to escape it. The fact is, Chinese youngsters are marrying later. Now, the main issue is getting their parents to embrace their choice.
不太喜欢人家用单身非单身来评判一个人。哦，我是不是单身其实是我自己选择的一个权利。我并不觉得像大家说的我现在这个年纪单身我有多么的可怜，我有很多事情要自己做。我觉得如果我选择单身你也不需要同情我。那当然这也不是一件值得骄傲的事情，并没有因为觉得我单身然后我自己独立我的生活过得很好特别骄傲，我觉得这就是一个普通的状态。
Sorry 刚才没开机。
然后他的这个作者跟我真是没有缘分，他所有的作品统统不见了。
Robin, can you hear me? If you're online, or press one. Okay.
Yes, I can hear
you. You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. And first thing, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Are you up and at 'em or just up?
Up and at 'em.
Okay, good. What would be just your guesstimate on the average person who had, well, people determine how much time they have available. How much time, I mean, how much would you, say if there was a way you can legally earn money and for 1 hour's worth of your time, or let's say 2 hours worth of your time, what would you say will be an amount of money, I'll pay you such and such amount of money, if you give me 2 hours of your time. You know what? Let's make that four. 4 hours of your time. On a weekly basis, but the 4 hours has got to be done in 1 4-hour block. So, I'm not going to go into the details, but what dollar, not yet at least, what amount of money do you think the average would motivate a person? And you know what, let's put it on an hourly wage basis.
Yeah.
I got a job for you. It pays by the hour. It pays by the hour. But you get paid for 4 hours if you stick to all four consecutive hours.
Yeah.
Now, let's start off with this. What's the average, what's the minimum wage there in your neck of the woods?
I think $15 an hour, but I don't fault me.
Well, all right, so let's go with that. 15, and in 4 hours, that's $60, okay?
Yeah.
For 4 hours of somebody's time. All right. You know what? That, a lot of people would go for that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go for that. All right, what if you had the average person had the opportunity. Well, you can earn that in 1 hour. $60 per hour. But you got to do everything I tell you to do in that 60, that 1 hour. But if you do it, you get paid $60 per hour. So what do you think has more people's more of attention? I'll pay you $15 per hour for 4 hours worth of work, or I'll pay you $60 for 1 hour's worth of work.
That could be reasonable. What I would say is you want to give them something that you want to give them something that they can live with, that they can exist with, that not just struggle, okay? So, because we want to bring sustainability to the people. So watch this. If the end result is going to be that after you build the place, you're going to own it, blah, 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 and get paid to do it, once it's built, you want to then have enough money to furnish it, heat it, power it. You understand? Furnish it. You know. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah. So give me a figure. What do you call sustainable?
Okay, well, I think a lot of that might depend upon where you are. Like, for example, the cost of living in New York and Los Angeles may be higher than it is in Florida and Georgia. So it might have to be in relation to where you're at. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's true.
So if you start with like the national minimum wage, what is that, Christine?
I'm looking it up right now. National, because it does vary from place to place. Okay. Well, they have it broken down state by state.
Okay.
In Washington, D.C., let me go by state by state. Oh, man. Well, it is a federal. All right. Alabama has a federal state minimum wage. They go by the federal. All right. The federal minimum wage, because you did say national, is, and because the state of Alabama goes by the feds, they do not have any state level. The national minimum wage is $7.25, and that's of 2021.
Yeah, and so... you know, they might get away with that in those areas.
Now, that Alabama goes by the federal, so that's $7.25. However, in Alaska, the minimum wage is $10.34. Arizona is $12.15. Arkansas is $11. California is $14 an hour. Washington, D.C. is $15.20. Florida, where I'm at, the state minimum wage is $10. Let's see, Hawaii is $10.10. Idaho is $7.25. Let's see, Louisiana is $7.25. Maine is $12.15. Let's see. Michigan is $9.65.
Yeah.
Let's see. New York State.
And so, and,
It's $12.50.
So what I said is above what those are. And remember what I said, we want to give them something that will sustain them. So that sounds like that $15 an hour is spot on. That's a spot on figure, I think. Okay.
I think you're spot on, but here's my opinion on wages, particularly the minimum wage. I don't think it's a good or accurate metric. I think what it comes down to is a person's lifestyle. Because you have most of the people that end up in federal bankruptcy court, they have jobs where they earn a pretty good amount of money. But, you know, they get cars that they don't need to buy, or the price tag is more than they really can afford. They live in a house with a mortgage on it that the monthly payments are really more than what they need to be paying. So a lot of people who end up in bankruptcy court, matter of fact, the most financially sustainable people have been people on welfare. Because a lot of them have a sense of budget. And they can live with a minimum wage. But it's the people that live on Rodale Drive that end up in bankruptcy court and that type of thing. So I think, like I said, I think lifestyle is a better metric. Like, you're a millionaire. That's a lifestyle, all right?
Correct.
Right. Whereas if somebody gave you $1 billion, your lifestyle basically wouldn't change. Now, you would have more resources, you know, to play with, but your basic lifestyle wouldn't change. I'm just speculating. Anyway, but there is a minimum wage, because I think if you raise the minimum wage up to $500 an hour, which is not going to happen anytime soon, you would still have people saying, that's not enough for me to live on. Some people like to buy clothes.
And that's fine. And that's fine. So we have an answer for that, too. Well, if that's not enough, how about this? Try this. Spend 4 hours. We don't pay you nothing, but you spend 4 hours learning how to build, and you build. When you build, you own that, which is going to be worth more than $500. Now, how about that?
Well,
how about that, buddy?
Some people would go for that.
Because that's what people are working for. They're working for money to pay for their abode. They work. They get mortgages. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Right.
And they'll tell you, "I'm $500. No, I'm worth more than that." Okay, if you're worth more than that, then how come IBM or Google or ain't nobody else paying you that much? Okay, so or at all. And the best thing too, you want to create your own business is what I always say. Maybe I'm getting off track, but yeah.
Well, you were basically spot on with that $15 an hour. And with $15 an hour, living a sustainable, you know, let's go back to the first 725. Let's just round that down to $7 an hour. So 7 times 8 was what, 56? I can work with $56 a day. First thing, I can feed myself
$56
for a week.
I could go and get something, blah, blah, blah. And if I had a couple of good days, then I might go get an Uber and go across town, go to the market and pick up some fresh fruit. And I don't know.
Well,
you know?
$56 a day. I can roll on that. Now, granted, no, I don't want a Mercedes or a BMW to drive. I don't want any of that. Because when you have something like that, particularly when you're going to need maintenance, that can obliterate that. Just you know. But with the right lifestyle, $7.25 an hour, you can live pretty well. Now, here's the catch. The trick question is, how do you define pretty well? Some people call pretty well a 4,000 square foot house, fully furnished. And that house isn't fully furnished with debt-free furniture, but you bought furniture for the house. So, matter of fact, speaking of which, I had a tenant once, and I was over at her house to collect rent. And somebody knocks on the door. And wanted to take a guess who it was? If you're there.
Hello? Was it my friend?
No. This is a case that happened many years ago.
Was it her or the police? I don't know.
No, it wasn't the police. It was somebody worse than the police. If you can imagine that.
Code enforcement?
Worse than code enforcement.
I don't know, man.
Rental center. Rental center was there to repossess her furniture, including the beds that she and her kids slept on.
Yep.
I never got like that. I was there to collect rent. I had no problem collecting the rent. But the rental center was there, and they weren't going nowhere until they left with her furniture. I'll never forget that. Because I think she had like two sons. And, you know, they weren't even teenagers yet.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, moral from that story for me was, do not rent household furniture from the rental center. It's best to go to the Salvation Army.
No.
Where?
You can. It is best to go to Salvation Army. I have done both. It's lifestyle. So if you don't have a lifestyle of paying some bills over this, like if you choose to go get your nails done, your hair done, and keep your shoes current over some things, you understand? It's lifestyle. So because I've used Rent-A-Center quite a few times, and I've been successful in paying off. I've got equipment through them, computers, you know. So It's about the person being responsible. Being responsible is a lifestyle choice as well.
Well, it is. It is. It is. I know once there was some promotion, you know, get a free laptop. I guess it was over 20 years ago. Man, but when I saw which was attached to the free, I said, nah, forget it. They wanted to get the names and phone numbers of five people, including neighbors. And I said, no, I'll pass.
Yeah, no, I make them up. 777-927-8675309.
You know what? Somebody's probably done that. Somebody probably hasn't got away with it. But, yeah. But, anyway, going back to this lady. So I'll never forget it. She had two sons. They weren't teenagers. They were about 9, 10, 11, somewhere in those ages. But I didn't stick around, but it, like I said, it was two of them from Rental Center. And they had the truck parked outside, and they looked like they were not going nowhere. So that's why I said it was worse than the police. But you're right. If you're going to use the rental center, you know, you got to know, well, you already said it, lifestyle. If I were to ever use the rental center, it would have to be, I need whatever they might be renting for, like, maybe the day. Pick it up that day, bring it back that day.
Yeah.
And be done with it.
And other than that, I take my time and $50 here, $60 there. I would go to the thrift store.
Right.
Here's $200. Here's a nice couch. Boom. Like that.
Right.
Your bed. St. Vincent de Paul and Catholic Community Center. But there's a St. Vincent de Paul darn near everywhere. And every 2 years, you can get a voucher from them. And they'll give you and bedding. When I was in Houston, I got a bed, a twin bed for my unit in Airbnb, and I also got a bed for one of her other rooms over there just by going and getting on the list. Yep. But, I mean, there's a – but, see, some people, they have an appearance. Like, they're going to a mega church. So they have to dress the part and blah, 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 and drive the car and blah, 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 blah. You know, because they're about image.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, for a little trending topics here, on a sadder note, Bob Saget passed away yesterday, 65. James N. Toomey was what? How old was he? I consider that young still, or relatively young. Betty White, 99 last week. Oh, and Sidney Poitier, 94 last week. be interesting to see what happened with Bob Saget, because he just did a comedy club in Jacksonville like the night before he passed away.
He had just got done doing a show, found it just a few hours later, but no, they said no drugs, no foul play,
no foul play
involved.
I looked at his picture because I hadn't seen him in a while. Looked like he put on some weight, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't morbidly. It was just a little, you know, older, getting older weight. That's all, you know. Anyway, but we'll find out when they do an autopsy. We'll probably have that complete before the end of the week. So by the end of the month, we'll know. I was surprised when, was it last year, Sheila did from the Lockers? But they said Sheila did from the Lockers.
Shabadoo.
Yeah, Shabadoo, excuse me, not Shabadoo. Shabadoo. Yeah, he passed away at 65, last year, the year before.
He had
hypertension or something like that.
Yeah, he was.
Because you just think of that guy.
We had him on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B on Vibes Live Radio.
Oh, well, when was that?
Maybe about five years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, now, what kind of person was he?
Very humble, very approachable. I didn't do the interview. I was just a producer. Disco Daddy, it was his show.
Okay.
So, but listening to him, I'm going to find the interview and get it to you.
Okay. Yes, so I'm looking at his bio right now. Quiñones, that was his last name. Died at age 65 on December 29, 2020, at his home of undisclosed causes. A later coroner's report listed the cause of death as stereoscopic cardiovascular disease, which
hardening of the arteries.
Yeah.
That's just natural causes.
And what causes that? Because the guy was in, let's see.
Plaque.
Right.
What's that other stuff? High cholesterol, plaque.
Right. Yeah, that's what... Arthur Ashe had a heart attack, and he's trying to figure, wait a minute, how can this skinny dude, because he was slim, always playing tennis, but he had his diet was super high in cholesterol, or trans fat. Well... Anyway, let's see, arteriosclerosis, yeah, like you said, the thickening and hardening of the walls of the arteries occurring typically in old age. The buildup of fats, cholesterol, and other substances on the arterial walls. What's the main cause of this? Well, you already said that too. Caused by a plaque, build up a plaque. Risk factors include high cholesterol and triglyceride levels, high blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, obesity, physical activity, and eating saturated fats. Let's see, can arterial sclerosis be cured? Currently, there is no cure for that. Niacin and vitamin B12 are the best known to raise blood levels of HDL. Anyway. Any other news out there, Robin?
No. Not offhand, no.
All right. Well, it's a quiet Monday thus far. I think the work week should be Tuesday to Thursday. Actually, either Tuesday through Thursday or Tuesday and Wednesdays.
Tuesdays and Wednesdays. No, you can do the option of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, or Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Well, I like that. I would take Tuesdays and Wednesdays or Tuesdays
and
Thursdays.
We'll give everyone $20 an hour minimum wage, and we'll give everyone a 700 credit score.
No, you're going to have a workshop on that one.
Why? Just reset it. That's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Work week, Tuesday, Thursday. Oh, you said Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
Monday,
no, you said Tuesday,
Wednesday.
Thursday.
Monday, Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Wednesday and Thursday.
I'll do Wednesday, Thursday.
But
you know, because I think Monday.
But you do only Tuesday and Wednesday, you have to do longer shifts, maybe like a 12-hour shift.
For what days again?
If you only do Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, I'll do 12-hour shifts. Right. But, man, I've worked 12-hour shifts before. I've done it twice to pick up some extra money. And after that weekend, I said, and I haven't done it since. 12-hour shifts can be brutal. But I know some people that they work sick. I know some people. My mother was one of them. She used to work 16-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know what? The reason why I didn't do the 12-hour shifts no more, because, you know, I did it to earn some extra money. So when I got the check back, man, the government, it looked like more money was going in, and it was. I said, you know what? It wasn't worth it because I was basically earning more to give the government more. So I said, all right, you know what? I just won't do these 12-hour shifts no more. Now, I wouldn't mind doing 12-hour entrepreneurial shifts where, you know, you're getting paid by commission. But under somebody else's clock, nope, I don't want to do that. Anyway.
That's why we teach and encourage people to start their own business.
Right. Start your own. Interesting, that person hasn't called me today, but they did call last night. I wonder what they wanted at that time of night. Good thing they don't know where I live. And they're too far away anyway.
That don't mean nothing. They'll come all that way, knock on your door at 8 o'clock at night, talk about I came all this way and I ain't got nowhere to go. Huh.
Well, I would direct. I've never been faced with that situation before, but I couldn't help them. But you know what? There are people that have done that though.
Yep.
I met somebody once. This is when Ed McMahon was still living. And they used to send those, you know, those mailings, right? You've won this and all, whatever. You read through the literature, you ain't won shit. Anyway, this woman I met, it was at highway refueling stations, where, you know, where they got restaurants, gas, and all this other stuff. And she asked for a ride. So I gave her a ride to, you know, to the next exit or whatever. And we had a short little conversation. She was from outside the state. And she traveled somewhere down like South Florida, Miami or Fort Lauderdale, someplace like that, in the hopes of picking up one of these Ed McMahon You Won or whatever prize or whatever. So when she got down there, she found out it wasn't what she thought it was. So I gave her a ride to where I was going to give her, like, the next exit or whatever. And I got to give her credit. She asked me for some money for a burger. I said, nope, can't help you. But I did give her that free ride on 95, though.
Yeah.
To the next day. So, but I was getting ready to say, but I know, like I said, everybody, I mean, like I said, I got about four or five of those Ed McMahon things. And the way they wrote those things up was misleading, but it wasn't misleading to the point where you're stupid. You know, hold on, I'm passing judgment. I'm not calling that woman stupid. Obviously, she thought she won something.
Well, yeah, because you have to pay taxes on...
Well, she didn't get nothing.
Right.
I mean, if you open up that thing from way back when.
Oh, yeah, then they have you send in your name and you glue all the stamps and you scratch this and sniff that, right?
Yeah.
And nothing ever happens from it. Nothing.
Exactly.
Ever.
Exactly.
Ever, ever. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Ed McMahon, I guess he's gone now, but Donald Trump, he was probably losing his house, but Donald Trump saved him. Anyway, Robin, we're going to wrap it up for today.
Great show.
Okay, well, I'm going to play one song and then an outro, and that way we'll have a full 2 hours. So, thank you, Robin. Talk to you later. Talk to everybody later. Have a good day.
that you have gone.